argument this morning is United States against Owens. Mr. Moran.
May I please the court, opposing counsel. Your Honors, in our brief, we ask that the court vacate the defendant's sentence and remand for a new sentencing hearing. We ask for some alternatives at such a remanded sentencing hearing. We presented three issues to the court. I intend to focus on the third issue, which is the reasonableness of the sentence that was imposed, because, as I indicated in my brief itself, both as to the initial issue, which is a Booker-Blakely issue, that issue is there because I wish to preserve the issue, but the court has ruled in a significant number of cases against me. So I don't want to take up any time on that issue. Similarly, on the second issue, which is the ex post facto issue, while I disagree with the government's brief that Jameson, United States versus Jameson, provides me with an adequate analysis of ex post facto law, again, I'd rather just preserve the issue and get on to the reasonableness issue.
I can understand an attack on the reasonableness of his sentence, but I would have expected it to be coming from the prosecutor on a cross appeal. 60 months for three bank robberies in which death threats were made hardly seems unreasonably high.
If that was true, Judge, that might bear some analysis, but unfortunately, factually, the record doesn't show death threats at all. And in fact,
you will concede there were three bank robberies.
Right,
there were three bank robberies in 4 months. There's no question about it.
But if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, but Judge Castillo never made a factual finding on the content of the notes that were passed in the first two. Because I recall there's certainly allegations floating around here that there were death threats in two of them. But if that was not a question of fact that was resolved, then maybe we're to put, and if the district judge put it to one side, then we should as well.
Well, the district judge, if you go to the sentencing transcript, he did a number of things. At page 6 of the transcript, he indicates that he takes out the word threatening, and that was in regard to threatening note. Later, he asked the government, the government concedes that the only note recovered does not contain a death threat. The government argues in its brief here and raises the inference that the other two notes contain death threats, although if you read it closely, you see that they're not basing this on any evidence that was ever reduced. And in fact, Judge Castillo asked the government.
Testimony?
They suggest that they're relying on a teller. Judge Castillo said, well, do you have the teller? Because earlier in this case, over a year and a half earlier, the judge said he would give the government an evidentiary hearing on this issue. They did not come with any witnesses to the sentencing hearing. Now, one of the problems with this case, or one of the delights of the case, I don't know which, is the fact that this case, this plea came down. I came into the case at the day of the plea, actually, almost literally a day before, 2 days before, was that the Blakely case came down before we got to the sentencing hearing. Then when we get through all of that, then Booker comes down 6 months later. Everything is topsy-turvy for both sides in this particular case. We were always trying to play catch-up. I think in document number 54, which was my reply to the government sentencing submission, I cited at that time there were 37 or 38 district court cases, but no appellate court cases. And that is all preceding United States versus Mayat. I don't even know how to pronounce
it. Kitiuk, I think.
Yeah, which came down 3 months or 4 months right after. So
let me ask you this. I mean, believe me, we've all lived through this process as well. But sitting here today, we're looking at a 60-month sentence. We're looking at a district court who says, you know, I recognize, you know, you've put in front of me all these things Mr. Owens has done and all these things, but on the other hand, three bank robberies in 4 months is a lot of bank robberies. He does say, even if there is no threat in the note, merely to walk in to rob a bank can trigger a chain of very unfortunate events. I forget quite how he phrases that, but something like that. And so there's obviously a standard of review issue. He thinks that 60 months is a reasonable sentence. He runs them concurrently. So it's 5 years for this course of conduct. How are we as an appellate court to approach this, in your view?
Well, I didn't have an opportunity. In fact, this is my second day back after being out with the flu for a couple of weeks. But Judge Posner in the Cunningham case, also dealing with Judge Castillo, which came down, again, after briefing, I think, in this particular matter, indicated that Judge Castillo in the Cunningham case and here made a generalized reference to the individual factors that were presented to him under 353A, but no specific dealing with any one of those factors. In this case, we had a number of those factors. We had the depression, the serious depression that Mr. Owens was going through at the time, the fact that there were no weapons, the fact that he admitted to three crimes even though he was arrested for one, and in two of those crimes he didn't match the descriptions that the government had, the fact that he, at the time of sentencing, he had served more than 20 months.
So do you think we should take a de novo look at the 3553A factors, or do you think, contrary to what we've said in decisions, we should demand a fuller explanation from the district judges as to how they're handling, because I mean, we've said the district judges don't need to write a long exegesis on the 3553A factors as long as we can get some sense that it was put before the judge and it's presumptively reasonable to choose a guideline sentence. And Judge Castillo doesn't even pick the bottom of the range. He picks 3 months up from that.
Right, right. You know, I went over with some degree of detail trying to identify in Cunningham the factors identified by Judge Posner.
You know, it doesn't make any difference who writes the opinions of this court.
I'm just particularizing the...
That's my objection.
Anyway, you can just say Cunningham. It'll be fine.
In any case, in the Cunningham decision, the judge attempted to indicate whether or not, looking at the transcript of the sentencing hearing, generally whether or not the district court judge paid attention to 353A factors.
No, the point of Cunningham was that the defendant had a very solid, factually supported, and logical argument for a lower sentence, which the district court ignored. What very solid, factually supported argument for a lower sentence was made in this case and ignored?
Well, a number of things, Judge. First of all, there was no consideration as to the individual who was standing before him, which is the 353A.
No, no. Tell me what argument was made, what concrete, particularized argument was made by the defendant for the lower sentence was the kind of argument that would normally be thought a good one and was not mentioned by the district court.
He did not mention the depression of the defendant. He did not mention the service, his institutional record. He did not mention the HIV status.
This is just a laundry list. That's not what Cunningham is about. Cunningham expressly disclaimed any need for district judges to go through every conceivable factor. The point of Cunningham is that if there is a single, you know, big, an elephant in the courtroom, and the district court pays no attention to the elephant, there's a problem on appeal. What was the elephant in the courtroom in this case?
Your Honor, the elephant in the courtroom was the fact that 353A requires the court to look at...
353A is not an elephant. Right, that's just back to the argument that the district court has to traipse through the 353A statutes.
He has to give some credence to it.
Cunningham did not embrace it. If you can't tell me what the elephant in the courtroom was, nothing's happening under Cunningham.
Well, both Cunningham, my client did not have a long history of psychiatric illness. He was not a 49-year-old Vietnam veteran. What he was a 33-year-old fellow who had finished 3.5 or 4 years of college. there was no attempt by my predecessor to get more information about my client. However, we do know that my client knelt down in the street and asked the police officer at the bank to shoot him. There are a number of factors here that are
but maybe your elephant is mental status somehow, mental illness. I don't know how that was investigated, but this did seem to be quite a deviation from everything in his life before that.
That's correct, and I also pointed out that with the individual had enormous positive talents. There were enormous number of letters as to both his musicality and this sort of thing. The judge did not consider at all my motion for downward departure, which did delineate some other factors that I thought the court should take into account. Number one being his HIV status, which a number of cases recognized under 353A, but not under the guidelines, affects your length of life and so forth. And that's why the sentence of 5 years was particularly significant given that. I wanted to just say one thing on HIV status.
Yes, thank you, counsel.
That was discovered the night.
Thank you, counsel.
Wow.
Ms. Weiss.
May it please the court. The government respectfully requests this court affirm the sentence imposed by the district court. As outlined in detail in the government's response brief, the district court's sentence was reasonable. The district court adequately considered Section 3553A in sentencing a defendant within the guideline range. The district court considered the relevant factors, including the nature and circumstances of the offenses, defendant's history and characteristics, and the sentence was reasonable. And specifically, there's a block quote in the government's response brief, quoting the sentencing transcript, pages 29 to 32, that quotes the detail that Judge Castillo ruled.
Ms. Weiss, could you help me out with the matter of the notes? What did the district court, in your view, how did he resolve their content, and did he, in fact, consider them at the sentencing?
Yes, Your Honor. This was brought up at sentencing, and the judge questioned what evidence the government would have of the contents of the notes. The third note was recovered and had no death threat in it. The first two notes were not recovered, but the government had interviewed the tellers who had said that the notes contained these death threats. So it was discussed at sentencing what the government's proof would be, the fact that there were no notes recovered, and the fact that we were willing to bring forward the tellers if the court needed their testimony. And I was just looking at the sentencing transcript again, and it looks like Judge Castillo did strike the words threatening in the sentence in the PSR. And the defendant did not receive any points based on a threatening note. In fact, the count that received the largest number of points and was the prime basis for the grouping was based on the August 18th robbery, in which there was no death threat. So he did not receive any points on that.
And did the judge mention the notes while sentencing?
Determining what his sentence was, no, he did not. What he did do was say that he said there's no such thing as a nonviolent robbery of a bank because there are too many wild cards when you go up to a teller.
I do recall that passage.
With whatever type of note and start demanding money. You don't know what's going to happen. That teller drops dead of a heart attack. You're on the line for a felony murder offense, et cetera. So he actually, in his colloquy, said no matter what the note.
Thank you.
And the government would also note that defendant never asked for a sentence below the guideline range based on diminished mental capacity or depression or anything like that.
Do you think it's still necessary to make those particularized requests in the post-Booker world? He certainly was pleading for a lower sentence on the ground that he, as an individual, was not, as it were, your ordinary bank robber, and that he had this. He certainly had helped the government make the other two cases when it almost certainly never would have done so from the descriptions, and there were all these other factors about him. Do you think, seems to me in the post-Booker world, you can just say, I deserve a lower sentence?
I think that that's probably a true statement, and you can make all sorts of arguments of why you would want a lower sentence.
Well, he mentions the depression. He mentions the HIV positive status, which he'd only discovered, at the moment of arrest. He mentions all these things. I think it was certainly in front of the district judge.
And, Your Honor, I think that the judge did consider all of these things. And as I pointed out in my brief, even if under the Rodriguez-Alvarez case, for the purpose of a reasonableness analysis, this court will assume that those arguably mitigating facts that were resolved favorably to the defendant and then measure the sentence against the standard of reasonableness. So in this case, even assuming the judge had found, for example, that the defendant was depressed or some of these other findings, the defendant's 60-month sentence would still be reasonable in this case. For these reasons and the reasons set forth in the brief, the government respectfully requests the court affirm the sentence imposed by the district court.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement. And Mr. Moran, the court thanks you for your willingness to accept the appointment and your assistance both to your client and the court. The case is taken under advisement. The court will be in recess until tomorrow.